Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
This is Creating and Exiting CVC Investment Portfolios featuring GE Ventures and David Mayhew. In part one, we discuss the context for CVC and an introduction to GE Ventures. In part two, we'll be looking at the exit strategies and more of the points that came up during the discussion on this session.
Very welcome to AIM of Ours series of webinars and podcasts, where we're involving leaders in corporate venturing, investments and startups. I've got the great pleasure today to have David Mayhew from GE Ventures. Hi, David.
Let me come off mute. Hey.
Great to have you on, David. I think we go back over 8 years. I think with you and I known each other, and we've known sort of GE Ventures. Probably the last time we physically met was about 3 years ago when I was in California, when we were running programs there, and I had the great pleasure of running one of our Upstarts for Startups programs in the GE Ventures offices there in Menlo Park, which you were fantastic in helping us organize that, where we brought GE teams and other ventures, adults and their children, in to do some venturing, to instill sort of venturing sort of skills and that into a broad range of people. So really appreciated that. And it's great to have you on today, David. Thank you. So today's topic, which David's really going to be the main meat of, is around creating your corporate venture sort of investment portfolios. But as we'll hear from David, GE's strategy and focus is now changing. So we'll be hearing as well and having some discussions about exiting corporate venturing and exiting your portfolios and that as well. So we're really gonna have a great insight here to a full life cycle and some case examples of ventures that GE have invested in. So just some quick overview of what we're going to do. We've had brief introductions. As part of the etiquette, of course, on these webinars, could we all please mute so that we don't have any background noise or have things jumping around in terms of the video's concerns? We will ask you to unmute and be, because we will have some time for discussions and questions and that later. So I've got just a few slides to give some context, and then David's really going to be the main meat of this session, looking at creating and exiting corporate venture capital investment portfolios. As we're going through the session, please, in the chat is the best place we find for you to put your comments, put your questions, to raise points of discussion. That'll help myself and also my colleague, Samantha Northey, who's on this call as well, just help us to be able to sort of manage that sort of discussion. For some of you familiar with QR codes, which a lot of us are now, as we're learning this when we're going into environments to keep track of where we are, if you use your mobile phone, open the camera and point it at the QR codes in the presentation I go through, it'll link you through to the materials that we're talking about there. And there's one over my shoulder and that as well. But that's a sort of a useful quick connection when you can't link through on these webinars to materials. So some context. We know we're going through a massive change in technologies. We're going through a massive change of business models. And GE are going to highlight to us now why and how they've done their venturing. And there's a few slides here just to illustrate, really, in the energy space, for example. Of course, we're moving from big power stations burning fossil fuels, and we're getting new devices, we're getting new ways of saving energy. But as we know, we're moving to a distributed energy and data-driven sort of energy and transport mobility environment. We're also seeing health being digitized, and GE and health has been a key area in their portfolio as well. So again, looking after sick people in hospitals, to new devices, new technologies, and the power of data now in monitoring and help improve health and wellness sort of outcomes. And in fact, our next webinar is on the 5th of November, is with Merck Global Health Innovation Fund, who will be diving more into this sort of space in there as well. And then also we're seeing that all transactions now are becoming data-driven, automatic transactions, automatic pricing, automatic sort of things through the supply chain, and IoT, as I know some of you on the call are also sort of covering. So we're seeing this transition in these sort of three horizons. Now, in the book that that we published about 3 years ago now, called Purpose to Performance around Innovative New Value Chains, we highlighted really what's the strategic purpose about why you're doing venturing and why you're doing innovation. What's the appropriate process? So things like corporate venture capital, investing in startups, partnering, incubation, university collaboration. So those are different processes to drive those things. Who are the partners you're working with? So other funds, startups, incubators. And then what are the performance measures to show you're being effective in your venturing? So financial returns, strategic returns. But central to this really are the people. So how do you determine your strategy? Have you got the right sort of people within your teams running the venturing program? Are those people got the skills to sit on the boards of startups? And have they got the right performance sort of metrics to drive and motivate those individuals? So I think what Dave is going to be covering and what we're going to look at in GE is a sort of a case example really of this sort of framework. So that's really some context in terms of some of our thinking around being strategic in your sort of innovation. And really, I think at the heart of it is when we've got a new world, when we've got new technologies, when we've got new business models, can the corporate venturing unit be the eyes and the ears and that being the top of the crow's nest to see sort of where that future sort of new world is in these new business models, like the examples I just gave in energy and transport and health. So that's just sort of some of the context and that what we're doing. We've been pleased to say that, you know, over the last number of months, we've had some fantastic content and presentations. So Kamal from Chevron here was on when we had Kurt from Shell Ventures speaking a few weeks back, and we're pleased to say that we can share with you sort of videos from those previous sessions. And from this session, the main presentation part is also we'll be sharing as well, but we won't be sharing sort of the discussions that are happening and that on this call and that today. Upcoming, we've got Merck, as I said, Bill Taranto, who's been running the Merck Fund, speaking on the 5th of November. So if you go to our Eventbrite page, you'll see that. A couple of other things that we've got upcoming, which are a bit different to the usual things we're doing. We've been running for some time now. So there's our team and some of the corporates that were participating in the workshop we did at Williams, where we brought them together and we've done roundtables. Of course, in this time of social distancing and not going into workplaces, we can't do some of these things now. So we're running an online session on the 11th of November, which is really going to go into depth on strategic innovation and venturing. We've got great content, we've got great discussion, and we've got sort of learning online, which sort of replicates some of those programs we've sort of done in physical environments. So that's on the 11th of November. The other thing we're doing, which we've done really successfully as well in the past as well, is a real venture capital case studies. This is an 8-part case study where you make the decisions of, you see the original pitch decks, you see the original business plans, and you decide how much you're going to invest in this startup venture. And then once you've invested, you're then sitting on the board of that business. And then how is that business going through the 8 parts of getting customers, raising new investment, and you being on the board of that business? But we've also got content in between to discuss the conflicts between a corporate investment and a financial investment and this sort of strategic balance. So there's some interesting perspectives there, and we're running that on the 25th of November. So those are on the Eventbrite page and that as well, if you'd like more details and you'd like to sign up for that. So lastly, say a lot of this stuff has been driven by the book, and that's available on Amazon, but also we've now got available, you can have signed copies and that if you wish. Again, it'll be on the Eventbrite page. So that's enough from me in terms of content and sort of discussion and giving some context. So I'd like to hand over to David now to give us the insights and perspectives and that from GE Ventures, please, David. Over to you.
Sure. Well, thank you, Andrew. I appreciate the time. I know we've done a number of these together, and they've always been as informative for me as I hope for the other people watching. I think Andrew framed this very well. I'm certainly not here to try and teach or suggest anything that we did is more relevant or less relevant than any of all of you are going through. I think it's more of a case study. I'm happy to be completely open and honest about what we did well and the numerous things we did very poorly, and what led to the life cycle, the growth, the success, the turn, and how we're dealing with it. Just very brief background. So I am Chief Investment Officer and I run the Ventures Unit at GE. We originally founded this group back in 2013. Beginning of 2013, we had a very rapid growth. At our peak, we had, I think, about 25 investors, plus the back office, plus a number of adjunct businesses that we ran with the Ventures Unit. And I'll talk about that a little more. We were making we had a goal of doing 25 to 30 new investments a year. And in our busiest year, I think we did about 28. We had a portfolio that peaked at about 115, 120 companies. And keep in mind, this sounds like a lot, but at GE, we were managing this across five different business units. So it's almost like having four or five different venture units all compacted into one. We reported up to the corporate as opposed to an individual business unit or anywhere else. I'll talk a little bit about how we got set up and why that was either right or wrong in the success or lack of success in some of the stuff we did. We had some great wins in exits. We had some great wins strategically within the organization. We had some great failures, both financially and strategically among our investments, which I think is typical for a venture capital unit. But I'm also want to focus it on things that are relevant to you. Please stop me at any point in time, ask questions. I will be as frank as I can about what went right or wrong and, making suggestions for others as they either move into this space, move along this space or move out of this space. But, I'm going to try sharing my screen here. I hope this works, but I will very quickly go through a couple of slides here. Hope they're relevant. Please ask questions along the way and stop me, and then we can go off slides and into whatever you want to focus on from this.
David, it's probably we find it's better if people pop their questions into the chat, and we'll come back to them at the end if that's okay.
Works for me.
Good
works
man. Thank you.
Okay, so can you see my screen right now?
Yep, that's great.
Okay. So just as this was really through the life cycle, we started up the Ventures Unit, as I think a lot of people do, where it's a way of accessing innovation. And it was a little bit of an island at the time in terms of how that functionality worked within the organization and how it was supposed to work with other areas of the organization. And it really took us about 5 years to figure out what role we were supposed to be playing in the organization. And a lot of it wasn't just us figuring it out, it was creating the role at the same time and figuring out how to work with the other areas of the organization that did similar things. And there are, in large organizations, antibodies to doing anything new, anything unique, anything that might step on other people's toes. And while you can say 1,000 times, we're here to work with you, not against you, people are very protective of their fiefdoms or regimes or their functionality. And it takes a long, long time to break through and convince people of that. Where we ended up, I think, in terms of the functionality of GE Ventures, was playing a role within the broader innovation playbook, as we called it. And that meant working with our global research, which was our, and continues to be our research and development organization. And GE has one of the largest and most effective, I think, certainly in terms of IP and other things, development platforms in our global research center, and then also with corporate development. And I think a lot of people start up venture capital units in order to seed BD activity and potential acquisitions. And really where we found the sweet spot of our value add was in the long-term planning for the business units and figuring out the build-buy partner relationship and where we should be focusing resources, funds, people, and where we shouldn't, to be honest. And as we found out the hard way, corporations are very reluctant to partner. They want to control the process. They want to own the outcome. They want to be responsible for it along the way, and they want to make all the decisions along the way. And partnering is kind of the opposite of that, where you have to give up a lot of that control in order to get to an end game. And so what we would do as a functionality is we would join the business units in doing their long-term 10, 20-year planning. And a lot of this we initiated with them. And we would set out with them and say, okay, where do you want to be in 20 years? Where do we think this industry is? Where do we play now? Where do we want to play? What are the assets we need to get to that end game? And we would create matrices of, we need this functionality, we don't need this, we need to sell this, we need to add this. And in each of those boxes, we would say, okay, what have we got? Do we need to build that internally? Do we need to buy somebody to get there fast? Do we need to partner? Do we need to control it at all? Or do we need this as an input into our end game? Or do we need to sell it? I mean, this isn't a core functionality and we're better off just, you know, hiring some firm to do that for us and focus on our core functionality. And we learned a lot from these sessions. I'll give as an example, you know, with our oil and gas team at the time, we sat down and did this and said, okay, where do you think this industry is going in each of the spaces over the next 5 to 10 years? What have we got? Where are we going to play in these industries? And one of the things we learned was, and where do we see, and what we brought to it was, we went out and said, well, where is venture capital spending its money in oil and gas? And what are we looking at versus what you guys think? And there was a big disconnect between where they thought the industry was going, where the value add was going to be, and where we saw people investing cash from financial investors in the space. And we said, well, we can't both be right. Let's try and meld this and see where, and we changed our investing strategy from that. I think they changed where they thought the value chain was going and where they shouldn't be focusing. And we came up with a longer term plan, and we had a real focus from that as to, well, what should we be looking for to help you? Just as an example of one of these. The other thing we did was we set up a new business creation group. And that was tightly with the global research or R&D functionality. Like most organizations, we created a lot more IP than we could actually commercialize or sell. IP doesn't age well or sit on the shelf well. So we used our connections with the entrepreneurial community and said, hey, can we build a company around this? And during our time, I think we built 8 or 9 startups within the organization, some of which were really closely tied to the organization, some of which were peripheral and were using technology that was being thrown off by the organization. I think 5 of those went on to raise outside money. A couple of those are still functioning very successfully in the both the healthcare space, the aviation space, some of the software, where we now hold a minority investment, and this is like a regular corporate CVC investment for us now. But very, very successful. And I will say, from a strategic perspective, we got about 50 times more value internally within the organization and discussion and interaction from those than we did from the 120, 130 investments that we were sitting on as an investing group. But anyway, this is sort of where we ended up, where we saw our value. And I think as I just talked through this, you're going to hear me say the word alignment a lot. And this is really where we had to align within the organization, both at the top level from the people writing the checks, the CFO, the CEO, depending upon who you report to, all the way down to, and the biggest disconnect in alignment is who you engage with and who is going to use the technology from the investment that you are making versus, you know, the strategic people who are sitting up in glass towers and making decisions, et cetera. So I'll just move on to that. So we're talking about accessing innovation and the life cycle. Very early on, I know a lot of you are already set up, but I think the point I want to make here is the success or failure of a corporate venture group is tied almost entirely to the alignment that it has within the organization. And that's at about five different layers within the organization. And if you get these wrong, life will be very difficult. It will be hard to get success, even if you are financially successful. You know, you'll get asked about the strategic side of it, vice versa. And I think it all comes down to what are you here to do? What's your purpose within the organization? Who is setting it up? Are you being set up by the CFO? Are you being set up by the head of R&D? Are you being set up by a business unit? Or where do you report? How do you think about it? And why are you doing this? And what we found, and I think somebody mentioned Sue Siegel, who was brought in originally to run and grow the group. We talked with probably 100 of the Fortune 1000 companies. And disappointingly, a lot of people were doing it because they saw everybody else doing it and said, well, I guess we better get one of those out there and start looking at things. And they were getting asked, well, why don't you have a venture unit? And so they would do it. And it was destined for failure right from the outset. But the alignment of what you are trying to accomplish and how you're set up and why you're set up is I think, core to the longer term success of, as it is for any organization within the corporate. Again, keys to success. I cannot overstate the alignment part of it. Proper setup. I think someone for Chevron was talking about they're on their seventh fund. If I was doing this over again, the first thing I would do is say we need to set up as a fund, not investing off of the balance sheet. That it creates a whole different set of alignments of responsibilities, of decision making, of life cycle. If you are in a fund where you are making the decisions, that is pre-authorized capital effectively. And as you will find through the life cycle of a venture group, or every venture group does, is you doesn't matter how good your investments that you find, if the checkbook gets cut off, it's going to be a very difficult time. And when you go back and try and do a follow-on investment for something that used to be strategic and is no longer strategic, and you find people saying, well, why would I ever follow on with that? That's going to impact your ability to get into new deals as well, especially from financial investors. Accessing deal flow, certainly a strong measure of success. I think a lot of people come into this thinking we've got a great name in the industry, the world will be the path to our door. It's not the case. Most financial investors out there do not like corporate VCs. They see them as dumb money. They will take your money in a heartbeat. If you don't use the company's product or help market it very quickly, they write you off very quickly. But most deals, the financial VC is deciding who gets in the deal, the allocations with the company, they would prefer not to have corporates in there unless you bring something more than money to the table, and you actually have to follow through on that. And that means alignment back with the parent organization in order to be able to bring that. And they want access to, you know, everything from your customer list to your R&D people to marketing people to finance to everything and contacts in the industry. And then be a good partner, and obviously, and we can talk more about that, and then measuring success. Again, this goes to alignment and telling the story. It is so important to tell the story internally. Whether it's successes or failures, people love to hear the stories, frankly, and showing what value you're adding, and it goes back to that original alignment and who you're talking to, is absolutely key. things to watch out for, and these we've learned the hard way over time. You know, people love to attach your name to their pitch books next time they go out. You know, they're it's hard to get in the investment, but once you're in, they ask you, the first thing they'll ask you for is a copy of your logo so that they can put it on their pitch book and say, you know, this is one of our partners or our investors. And they use it to validate the technology and the company, and your name will be inexplicably linked with that organization. I can't tell you the number of times where we put $1 million into a $20 million round, had a small participation, and I'd open the paper the next week and see GE invests in X. And it was, and I'd start getting calls from the organization going, what the hell are we doing? Why are we buying this company? And it's like, whoa. We are a tiny, tiny minority within this round, let alone the company as a whole. The interaction with the parent company is key. Frankly, this is why most of these companies want a corporate in there versus a financial VC. And your ability to bring those people to the table is really core to their determining whether you were a great partner or not. And your investing partners will determine whether you were successful or not. So the flip side of that is, you know, when we'd get a fun company or a great company with a lot of alignment, everybody at GE wanted to talk to them, and they wanted them to do presentations and come to this conference and speak at this and that. And these little startups with 20 different investors just cannot afford the attention that we give them. And, you know, we have very specialized people because we can, as large organizations, that do very, very finite jobs. They have 20 people doing every job. And when we ask them to do things, it pulls hard away from them actually functioning and growing the business. I've talked a little bit about the view of outside investors with corporate VCs, and I'm sure a lot of you can have your own experiences with this. This is sort of the holy grail when you talk about corporate VC, is what have you done for us? What are you doing for us? You know, what do you bring to the table? And, you know, when you're around for a long time, I love that Chevron's been around since 1999. I mean, once you get over 10 years, you generally have some great exits. You've got a great story to tell. People get what you're doing. And it doesn't make it any easier, but at least your functionality within the organization is understood. The first 3 years is the hardest. Generally, you have been spending money and not receiving money. You're spending it in things that people don't always understand why. And everybody wants to know how you're doing. And so you give them an IRR or something like that, and it looks horrible, or it's all on paper because it was markups, but you don't get any cash back. But the strategic value is really, really hard to measure. And I always made the statement, you know, if we're riding up in the elevator with our CEO and somebody says, oh, those, you know, ventures guys were core in finding us this opportunity or these people or this business model, that will go further than anything I can put on a PowerPoint page and show to people. It is really, really hard to tell that strategic value, but you need to, especially during those first 3 to 5 years. If you are earning your cost of capital, people will give you a lot of leeway. If you're not earning your cost of capital, as you generally aren't in those first 3 years, you better have a great strategic story to tell in order to validate the existence of the group and get through those 5 years. Lesson learned. So the average life of a CVC remains at less than 5 years, and this has been a fact since I started doing these with Andrew. I don't think it's gotten any longer. We see a lot of corporates come in, a lot of corporates go out. GE made it a little longer than that. I think we're in our eighth or ninth year. But all we're doing is stretching out the bell curve on that one. over communicate. Again, this goes to alignment and explaining what you're doing strategically, financially. Partner, don't dabble. And people always ask us, you know, are you first and foremost financial or are you strategic? And you get that question a lot. And as we set swim lanes that are strategic, and within those, we are a financial investor. And there's a number of reasons. I mean, we could find the most strategic investment in the world, and if they go bankrupt, it's not that strategic. So we are first and foremost a financial investor. That makes us a better partner to our co-investors. But we get the strategic side of it by staying within the swim lanes of what we are looking for, what we're looking to invest in. That was for healthcare, that was for oil and gas, that was for power. It was, and that was the alignment that it took us 5 years to get with the business units as to what should we be looking for that is meaningful for you. And then we would go out and find companies within that space and try and pick the winners. And unless you pick the winners, it just doesn't work. The most important lesson we learned, the most important message that we had to shift within the organization was, what can they do for me to what can I do for them? And this is with the portfolio companies. I cannot tell you during the first 2 years where we would have the number of times we would have a presentation with the CFO. And the first question he would ask us is, how much are they buying from us? You know, what are they bringing to the table? And, you know, what can they do for us? Why are we in this investment? And it was really the wrong question, frankly. And I mean, most of these companies are small startups. They got 30 people, they got 40 people. We've got 200,000 people. There's not a lot that they're going to do that moves the needle for us. The only way they can move the needle for us is if their technology becomes industry standard. If they become the de facto winner in the market and we are along for the ride and have insight into that, that's where it becomes valuable for us. And the only way we can get there is to say, what can we do to help them become that, as opposed to what are they doing for us? And that took a long, long time to get through the organization and the various levels of the organization. Ironically, the lower or deeper you go within the organization, the more anxious they are to engage with the startups, and they want to learn, they want to see how other people do it, they want to check out the product. When you got to the higher levels, it was much more strategic and, you know, what are they doing for us? What are they doing for us? So it was a different story depending upon where you were in the organization. That's really what I wanted to just share from that perspective. In terms of the life cycle, I can tell you just as backdrop. So I think, as all of you know, GE went through its hard times over the past 3 to 4 years. We had a change of CEO. And Jeff Immelt was key to starting up the ventures business and being a key supporter for that unit. He would go regularly on roadshows throughout the organization and tell his business leaders, go talk to ventures about that. Go find out what the entrepreneurs in this industry are doing. Get some new ideas. GE was getting way too insular, way too navel-gazing and bureaucratic. And he wanted to, every time he'd come out to Silicon Valley and we'd take him around to see people, and you could see him get excited about some of this stuff. And he would take it back within the organization. He was one of the biggest champions we had. I think now that he's left, he's actually sitting on the board for 3 or 4 startups and joined as an advisor, one of the VC firms out here. But when we lost Jeff, we didn't lose a lot of the traction we had internally within the organization. What effectively happened was the organization went from being very corporate and centralized focused to decentralized. And if it wasn't done in the business unit, we weren't going to do it. And so instead of, and the value for the corporate venture team at GE was that it sat at the corporate. And so it wasn't subject to the whims of individual businesses. And when the new CEO came in, he basically said, everything gets moved down to the business. There's no centralized functionality here. And ironically, as we are living through the life cycle of GE Ventures, the individual business units are now start investing in startups, And I get regular calls and emails and asks to help support, well, how do we do this? And you do want to shake your head and say, well, you know, you had a centralized organization with that expertise a while ago. But it's replicating itself on a smaller level within the different business units now than it was at the corporate. So it's really, instead of getting out of the ventures game, it's being shifted downwards. That means, you know, we are selling off the portfolio. We hope to be done that. It took a lot longer than we thought it would. There were a lot more issues with doing that. I'm more than happy to get into the details of, you know, the roadblocks we ran into if you guys are selling off individual assets. Pushing the investments for exit. I think when you're in, very few people, the CEOs of these startups want to grow it as long and as fast and as hard as they can. They rarely want to talk about exit because they built this baby and they want to keep going with it. And a lot of times, and even in the boardroom, people don't want to bring up the exit discussion because you don't want to be seen as an unsupportive investor. But the minute that you do, you'll find that the alignment around the table is very much of, when are we going to exit? How are we going to exit? What are we going to start doing now to get to that exit point? And unfortunately, a lot of those tough conversations lead to, do we have the right leadership within the organization of the startup? So one of the things we found as we've gone through this is initiating those discussions led to events and situations for exit within the company that a lot of our partners were looking for, and we're just looking for an impetus to start. So I think that was a lesson learned as well along the way.
David, excellent. I think that's a fantastic overview. And I think the alignment, what we've been saying about being very clear about the purpose, I think is a great point, because otherwise, you know, the analogy I use is, you know, that a CEO comes back from Davos or Silicon Valley and says, oh, I want to do the same as Intel. I want to do the same as GE. Yeah. And I think that's the wrong place to sort of start. I think you've given some fantastic learnings in that here. Could we just go into a little bit more about the exit? So when that decision was made that GE is going to get out of venturing, it's going to push to the business units, how big was the portfolio then and what themes were they in?
Join us for the second part, where we'll be looking in more detail at the exit strategy and approach, and also other topics that came up during our discussion.